Hello, this is Rob Clark from the Chrome OS graphics team. I'm here to give you a bit of an update on what we've been up to with Chrome OS and Virgino, including what we've been working on, the current status, journey so far, a little bit about our CI setup, demo, and some other useful information. So probably shouldn't come as too much of a surprise if you follow Mesa and kernel development, but we've been working on Snapdragon Chromebooks, the first two reference designs being Trogdor and Strongbad. Trogdor for clamshell and Strongbad for detachable. And as far as I know, they're the first consumer electronics Snapdragon devices to ship with upstream kernel support. And not just that, but upstream kernel support that's in place before they even shipped. And why might you ask, do we care about upstream kernel support? Well, on the Chrome OS side of things, we need to support devices for a relatively long lifespan, which means we need to be able to do kernel updates to new kernel versions. We need to be able to do security and bug fixes. And that's not really something you can do with the Android vendor kernel approach of millions of lines of code of downstream patches. And what's more, it's, as far as I know, the first consumer electronics ARM devices to ship with open source graphics drivers, all in upstream Mesa before they shipped. And why might you ask, would we want open source graphics? Well, really, largely the same reasons as above. But also we need to be able to implement extensions and features that are important for our use cases. One recent example is the EGL-KHR mutable render buffer extension, which is important for low latency ink. Despite the awkward name, what that lets you have is front buffer rendering, essentially, which is important for low latency stylus. To reduce the latency between the pen position and pixels on the screen. And also, with an open source driver, this gives us good synergies with Intel and AMD. If you take the example of the mutable render buffer extension, that's all in shared code that's also used by Radeon SI and Iris. And there's other benefits. I mean, we found in fixed bugs that would have hit Intel or AMD when they move to a newer Mesa. There's lots of common and shared code, NUR, threaded context, and so forth. And, you know, of course, it's also the right thing to do. So what's the current status? Currently, we're at, on the Gallium side, at Glass 3.2. We've been passing all of DQB, Glass, and EGL since maybe around August of last year, because of course that's a required part of Android CTS that we need to be passing in order to ship. On the Vulkan side, Turnip is at Vulkan 1.1. We've got maybe approximately 15 remaining CTS failures to fix up. And we're also about 7 extensions away from a 1.2. We're supporting, in addition to the older generations of Adreno 200 through 500, we're supporting all 4 sub-generations of Adreno 600, where Gen 1 is 618, 615, 630. Gen 2 is 640 and 680. Gen 3 is 650. And the most recent Gen 4 is Adreno 660 and the 7C3. And also as of a few weeks ago, we're passing all of DEQP Glass on 7C3. We also have lots of nice developer tools to like IsoSpec, which is a XML-based shader instruction set description that we use to generate the code for encoding and decoding shaders. We have a crash deck for decoding GPU core dumps, which capture the entire command stream of a faulting submit, GPU register snapshots, SQE, which is a CP processor, we capture its registers and program counters and which packet it's parsing and so on. Recently, in last year, we have Perfetto support for giving a better picture of overall system performance. So, in the beginning, I started at Google and working full-time on Frigino in April of 2019. You know, if you can remember back to pre-COVID days. Anholt started about a month later. Between us, been working on Frigino. Anholt's also done a lot of stuff on just making Mesa better, like consolidating all the format enums and working towards getting rid of GLSL to TGSI and so forth. So in the first part, the focus was really finish all the big features and extensions and, you know, start a little bit bringing down the DEQP failures. You know, an important part of this was getting CI set up, which is covered a little bit more in later slides. So in the early days, I think we went from maybe 90-95% DEQP pass to just having a few remaining failures by the end of the year. This is also the point where we start having a Play Store, which gives us a lot more interesting workloads and bugs to debug. I'm a big fan of SuperTuxcart, but on ARM systems, there's not a lot of games available because you're generally limited to the open source games. And this was kind of the times before crazy people started doing, you know, emulation tricks for Steam Store on ARM. This was about the point in time where we started working on MediaMP. We knew we'd really need FP16 support to hit our performance targets. So we worked with the Gallia on retrofitting MediaMP support through GLSL and plumbing it through NUR. It was about 2 years ago at XDC when a bunch of the NUR and other developers locked ourselves in a room and kind of hashed out a plan for moving forward on MediaMP. And then I think it was late October of that year that we brought up Adreno 618. This is interesting in a couple ways, partly because it's the GPU that's actually in the 7C Chromebooks that we're shipping today. But it's also the first time, I think, that I know of that we've done wake up with Mesa on a Snapdragon device. At this point, we had already made the decision to go with the open source drivers, so there was no more blob driver available. So Qualcomm and hidden away in their labs when they're bringing up the first samples needed some way to bring up the GPU, and they did that with Mesa. And, you know, I worked remotely with them on that. So about the very end of 2019, beginning of 2020 is when we started getting our first batch of Trogdor EVTs back. This is where the so-called real work begins. This is the thing that's going to be the reference design for the Chromebooks that are shipping these days. You know, this is where it starts getting interesting. Of course, COVID soon makes the hardware schedule interesting with factory shutdowns and parts shortages and so travel restrictions and so on. But meanwhile, we kept pushing on the bug fixes and fixing game bugs and so on, and got to 100% DEQP and SCIA SKQP pass. And so the focus shifts more towards performance. We landed medium P support, shader compiler improvements that brought little gains, 5-10% here or there sorts of things. We figured out how to drive LRZ properly. In particular, the hardware has a nifty early LRZ, late Z mode. So LRZ is like kind of like a for-free Z subsampled Z prepass that you get during the binning pass. Early LRZ, late Z mode lets you do early Z tests in cases where a later draw occludes the fragments from an earlier draw. But in a normal case, you wouldn't be able to disable early Z because, say, there's a discard in the fragment shader. This work done on plumbing UBWC bandwidth compress buffers formats through Android, which is also used now on the Intel and AMD Chromebooks, getting shader disk cache up and running for quicker game startup time, and so forth. And I'd say overall, we in terms of like benchmarks, we roughly nearly doubled the performance in the between late 2019 and mid 2020. Then the focus starts shifting more towards system performance, and it does no good if you have the best benchmarks, but if you have system level issues, CPU freak, GPU freak governor, task prioritization, and so on, then you're not going to have a nice user experience. So early on, kind of counterintuitively, we had the most problems with more lightweight games. Think something like Alto's Adventure, which is not really pushing the limits in any way as far as performance, but they would just not generate enough CPU load to push onto the big cores or to ramp CPU freak up enough, and then there'd some other thing would happen in the system and in the background, and they'd get preempted, and you'd have a frame rate stutter, and that's not very nice. I also found some issues with prioritization, in particular on the Android side of things, Surface Flinger and everything that's involved in the path from the application to the screen runs as real-time priority, which means it's running at a higher priority than the work queues on the kernel side that atomic helpers use to push async, non-blocking atomic updates to the driver, which is not great. You really want that to have a higher priority than Surface Flinger starting on the next frame. So some of that has been partially solved, not the core DRM parts, but on the DRM MSM side of things, I've converted all the work queue usage to a K-thread worker with real-time priorities. We still need to sort out something better for things like the atomic helpers, and that's really a cross-driver issue. And that brings us up to the beginning of this year, when the first Trogdor base device, we call it Lazor. In the outside world, it's known as the Acer Spin 513, shipped. Unfortunately, very initially, we started getting reports of performance hiccups, in particular on the lower spec 4 gigabyte devices. And so I had a bit of a crash course on ZRAM swap and Chrome OS's approach to make Chrome work on such a low memory device. It turns out the low memory devices, once you have a whole bunch of windows and tabs open, they're under constant memory pressure. If your kernel driver has a shrinker, you need to really make sure that that it's as lockless as possible, and in particular, count objects needs to be lockless, and you want to reduce the critical section in scan objects. Because otherwise you can get having the shrinker called on all the CPU cores at once, and that just serializes everything in the whole system, which isn't great. So I'll take part of the blame for that, because I'd mostly tested on 8 gigabyte devices, because those were also the devices with larger disk sizes, and that's kind of useful when you're testing a lot of Android games to not have to be constantly uninstalling and reinstalling. But I think next time I'll remember to do some testing with mem equals 4G on the kernel command line. And we also are working on Perfetto support to improve our system level visibility, like what's going on the CPU cores in correlation to what's going on the GPU, and where are the system level bottlenecks. So here's, a screenshot can't really do it justice. You really have to play with the UI, but here's a Perfetto trace. I'm just using an Android GPU inspector as the UI for viewing the trace, but you can really drill down into very small time windows. If you see above the GPU timeline, you see all the CPU timelines, what frequency and what tasks are running. On the GPU timeline, you can click on that surface bar there and see information about the render target, how many MRTs, what the format is, dimensions, so on. Below that, you get a broken down view of the binning pass and per tile, clear or restore, plus draw, plus resolve. And if you go below, if you look below that, there's little yellow lines. If you highlight one of those, that shows you where on the CPU the command stream submission happened. And if you highlight one of those, that will draw an arrow to the point where it started executing on the GPU. And then, of course, below that, you can see GPU frequency and utilization and other performance counters. So we continued working on various CPU bottlenecks that were showing up in places. Threaded context was a big help in certain driver overhead situations. Of course, graphics bench driver overhead off-screen is a notable one. We multi-threaded our shader compiler and made it asynchronous so that we don't actually have to block until you do need to emit a draw with that shader. In particular, I was finding Asphalt 9 with their, which has a in-house game engine. It was generating new shaders mid-level quite a bit, which is leading to compile a new shader janks, which isn't great. The combination of the async shader compile and threaded context at least helped mitigate that a bit by hiding a bit of the latency. Another big one was user space fences and submit merging, which cut down on our number of kernel IOCTLs quite a bit, and helped in some cases where we're just, the CPU is bottlenecking the GPU too much for the GPU to ramp up to higher frequencies. On the kernel side, there's some recent GPU dev freak rework to improve some pedantic situations, which I'll go into a little bit more on the next slide, and then DRM scheduler conversion, which helps move blocking waiting on fences, like say you're waiting for the previous atomic update to finish. It moves that out of the user space ioctl path. There were also some cases which kind of annoyingly, we ended up having to resort to some GL renderer shenanigans. There are a few games that were trying to put trying to figure out what GPU they're running on and using different tiers of graphic settings. And when they saw Mesa, they didn't understand what it was, so they put us in the lowest tier, kind of artificially restricting graphic settings and artificially limiting frame rate, which was not so great. So I ended up implementing a way to do per device GL renderer overrides with DRIConf so that we can trick those games into actually running as fast as they should be. Oh yeah, and somewhere along the way we finished that last extension for GLESS 3.2 and figured out all of the corner cases where we needed to deal with UBWC or tiled demotion. So I mentioned about GPU Dev Freak. What I was finding, if you look, the bottom line here is showing you the GPU frequency, and the top line, or the above that, you can see where the GPU is actually active. And you can see that we're spending time here at higher frequencies while we're not doing anything, and then spending a lot of time at lower frequencies while we are trying to get work done. And, you know, then we repeat the process. So came up with a combination of a longer sampling period to, this problem was especially bad on some of the games that were limiting themselves to 30 FPS because the previous sampling period for Dev Freak was, I think, 10 milliseconds, which was just too short. And the constant one frame busy, one frame idle was really confusing things. So it was even worse in this screenshot here. You'd see it at a minimum frequency until almost the end of the rendering, and then it would pop up to the maximum frequency and then stay there for most of a frame doing nothing. What I ended up doing was going with a longer sampling period to average things out over a few frames, and then clamping the frequency to the minimum when we're idle, so we're not sitting there spinning away at a high frequency doing nothing. And then to mitigate a little bit the fact that the longer sampling period would take us longer, we'd take longer to react on interactive workloads, you know, think like scrolling a web page or something like after you've been reading for a couple minutes. There's a bit of a boost if the GPU has been idle for a while and it becomes active. We give a little bit of an extra boost to the frequency initially. So, a little bit about our CI farm. On the right here, you can see a picture of our little CI farm rack. The boards are actually kind of hard to spot. You can see some on the second shelf down from the top, and some below it. The boards actually don't take up very much space. We just stack the bare boards on top of each other with standoffs. A lot more of the space goes to the power supply, the USB relays, the network switches, and so on. So in the current state, we have about 25 runners total in the CI farm, 9 Adreno 630, although there's a couple that are offline at the moment, 8 with Adreno 530, and 8 with Adreno 307. This gives us enough to do pre-merge CI with 100% of DEQP, EGL, and GLESS coverage on the Adreno 600 devices. Also a 10% coverage run with the address sanitizer, 33% of a Vulkan run, in addition to several traces tests. We don't do it pre-merge, but we do nightly now thanks to Calabra performance traces, so we can track over time performance and see if something has come in that has regressed performance. And then on Adreno 530, we've got a little bit less coverage, mostly because there's some, at the moment, some CPU freak issues, I believe, that are kind of limiting how much we can run. And then the 306 has 100% coverage of all the GL it can do. It's not quite enough to do Glass 3.1. On a weekday, the CI farm's running between 500 and 1,000 jobs a day. It's much less busy on the weekends if you're looking for some CI time to test things. And because of all this, we've been able to keep the tip of tree Mesa green, and we've actually been shipping tip of tree Mesa in Chrome OS because of that. Basically, when we come time to uprev Chrome OS for Juno branch, we do a git fetch upstream main, git merge upstream main, and some testing. Do this roughly every 4 to 6 weeks, and it's worked surprisingly well. Initially, I expected that once we started shipping devices, we would switch to Mesa release branches, but this has actually worked well, so we just kind of stuck with it. We haven't had too many regressions on uprevs. Very early on, we had a couple times we hit YEV regressions, but we now have coverage of those code paths in CI. I think the only thing we hit from time to time these days are SKIA, SKQP regressions, because we don't have any coverage of that in CI, and SKIA is basically a GL fuzzer. A few of those times are actually SKIA bugs, so but, you know, still, catching them earlier would mean less time debugging later. And demo. Well, actually, this is kind of the demo. I, of course, wrote the slides on a 7C Chromebook running Chrome OS, and the presentation I recorded in an OBS studio running on a 7C Chromebook running Fedora and upstream kernel. So, you know, this is your demo. So, if you're curious, and I suppose everyone knows where to find upstream kernel and Mesa trees, so I didn't bother listing those, but this is what we're shipping in Chrome OS. The Chrome OS for Juno branch on Mesa is most of the time just tip of tree Mesa whenever we did the last uprev. Occasionally we cherry pick a few fixes. You know, whenever we do a merge from upstream update, the only delta is the addition of an owner's file. You know, we don't have any downstream patches. On the kernel side, the devices that are shipping right now are running a 5.4 based kernel with a lot of stuff from newer upstream backported. You know, most of the patches are either cherry-picked from upstream or from a next branch, you know, from Git, and sometimes picked from list. On the DRM MSM side, the one notable exception is we have a hack patch to tie KMS planes to a single CRTC to work around some user space issues. And for the detachable tablet devices, there's a pile of downstream MIPI camera patches, unfortunately. And then there's also some patches that are needed for the Android container to work. You know, Android has some dependencies on some downstream patches. Other than Android apps, if you are in dev mode on one of these Chromebooks, you can just build an upstream kernel and put it on it and expect things to work. So other useful things if you're interested in playing around with things like Upstream Kernel and Mesa and on Chromebooks, there's this thing called SuzyQ. It's this kind of orange looking, looks like a normal USB cable, but isn't. What it is actually serial to, you know, it gives you a TTY USB port for the kernel serial debug port, and also for the EC and CR50. So this is something I wish that Windows laptops had as well. It makes it much more less aggravating experience when you're making kernel changes and things don't boot. You know, you can at least get a debug UART port and see what happened versus just guessing. Other things I'd recommend to have would be a USB-C hub with Ethernet and power pass through. On all of these Chromebooks, you have two USB-C ports. You know, if you're using one for a SuzyQ, then you have one other remaining. USB thumb drive's useful to have. If you have a good image on a USB-C thumb drive, you can always recover. You know, it's pretty much impossible to brick. And then I put here a link to Jesse Barnes has a cross-util tree on GitLab, which has scripts that make it really easy to put a kernel on one of these devices. And then we also have some docs in Mesa about replacing the Android drivers, you know, in Chrome OS. So thank you, and hopefully by now I've managed to join the streaming thing to answer questions.
Ryan Hudek asks, how soon until UBWC 3D texture support so I start getting a warning about it?
Yeah, that's right. I guess we do have to go back and finish that. I'd forgotten about it.
Okay, it looks like the talk was pretty exhaustive, so there are no more questions for today. Thank you and your magnificent beer for the great talk. Thank you.
All right, I'm going to get some coffee.
Have a good morning and have a great conference.